Hey Matthew, Dave Weiner here. So, you may want to look into the W3C and how it the role it plays relative to open formats and protocols on the web. It's, I don't know, 25 years old. It's been around for a long time, and so it was. I think, in a way, civil should look at that as prior art for how attempts to govern open protocols, platforms, communities, how that starts out and how it evolves. And I've, you know, had a fair amount of experience with the W3C over quite a few years. My two most important ones were, they don't ratify open development work. They do their own development work. So, for example, I got together with some guys at Microsoft in 1998 to do a communication protocol for the web called XML. And it ended up being called XMLRPC, and it was just four guys total, we did it in like a month. It from beginning to end, from concept to actual implementation, deployment, and a spec, a format, a sample code, and then another few months after that to have implementations in every runtime environment that was out there at the time. It really caught on because it was a really good idea and it was at the right time. And so a couple of years later, the W3C is asked to get involved by Microsoft, IBM, Sun Microsystems, Oracle, a bunch of companies that whose names I didn't really recognize, who were multi-billion dollar companies at the time. That were enterprise technology companies. And Microsoft was leading this. And it wasn't the four guys, or the two guys from Microsoft, and certainly wasn't involving me or Don Box, who later would go to work for Microsoft. I was called in to the first meeting of this group, and I couldn't believe what I saw. It was like there was a huge table. It was at Microsoft. Huge table. There must have been like 100 people in the room, and I really could immediately see where this was going. I was like Morris the cat, you know. It was like, because they really stroked me. I mean, it was really nice, you know, nice kitty and whatever. But when it came time to talk about how this stuff was going to evolve, I could see right off the bat that I was not going to have any influence or say in it, even though I had driven the process, participated in driving the process, one quarter of the driving of the process, actually more than one quarter, that got this whole group together in the first place. But by the time it became a W3C thing, well, then, you know, you fast forward another few years, and what comes out of that process is called SOAP, S-O-A-P, for Simple Object Access Protocol. And then there were all the WSX web services, where X could be, I mean, there were like 20 different formats, protocols for everything. And what they were doing was recreating the world that they had had prior to XMLRPC, prior to the web, that helped to reinforce the business models that they had developed around all this stuff, which totally depended on it being complex and inaccessible to individual developers, because that's where their revenue came from. Their revenue came from the incomprehensibility of the whole thing, and the fact that they could say that they were conforming to open standards, yet have absolutely no interop. It's why a lot of this stuff is a joke. I mean, you know, you really, seriously, a lot of it is a total joke. So, you know, if you were to map that onto the situation we're in right now with journalism, well, I don't think this is the thing to do, okay? I really don't think it's the time for it, and I don't think it'll bear anything remotely like the fruits that is contemplated for it, and it will take a long time to reach the same conclusion that the soap process reached. It happened also with RSS. They wanted to re-engineer the whole thing, and there they had a it was a lot more difficult for them to do it because RSS is really so big, it was hard for them to avoid it. So really what all they did was come up with different names for the same things. They couldn't make it more complicated. I don't think they didn't try. They did. I think they did. I mean, they, you know, who knows? The individuals involved are mostly decent people. I don't really know them that well. I can't vouch for them. I'm certainly not a god, and I don't get to judge their, you know, ethics or whatever. But net-net, it was a lot of money and energy, and they continued to stroke me. I mean, I kicked back and let them do it. I just said, fine, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get in your way on the soap process. And in RSS, I made some private inquiries when they were launching their Atom project at the IETF, and the W3C was trying to seduce them out of the IETF. They said they wanted the project. They didn't want it to go to IETF. Privately, I contacted W3C and I said, well, instead of trying to charm them, why don't we just work on ratifying RSS as a W3C standard? And they thanked me and they said, that isn't what we want to do. And they went back to their failed attempt to try to take over Atom. And all that ended up was doing was putting an asterisk on RSS. You could say RSS or you could say RSS slash Atom, but you just couldn't do it without RSS because too deeply entrenched. And oddly enough, this intersects with the world of journalism. And the reason why RSS was so strong was because the New York Times just said, fuck it, let's do it. And it worked. I mean, it's the people don't appreciate the power. And the problem isn't really how to decide what is and isn't journalism. I mean, that's a head trip, as I said in the tweet that I posted. It's like the problem of 2018 is how do you say definitively whether or not something is fake news, right? I mean, that's the purpose. That is the problem that Civil is trying to solve, is that we want to have a way of saying for sure that this is and this isn't fake news. And there are infinite problems with doing this. Number one, it's going to take a few years for this to spit out any kind of an answer, if it ever does. My guess is that, well, I don't know. I'm not even going to hazard a guess. It won't happen quickly. And the problem that with this question of what is and isn't fake news is a past problem. It's no longer a current problem. I mean, it was a surprise. We all were surprised to find out that this was going on. I was totally surprised for about 5 minutes. And then I realized, well, of course that's happening. Why wouldn't it be happening? I mean, it's look, the way advertising is set up on the internet, there's a tremendous incentive to build flow because that's where the money is made. And conspiracy theories and news that's too exciting to possibly be true is a great way to build flow. And so, well, of course they're doing it, right? But there is a much better way to do this. If you and I want this problem to be solved. I tried, Matthew. I really, really tried. I went down to Phoenix, and at every session I was in, I tried to propose this idea, and I wasn't even ever allowed to complete the thought in terms of even speaking there, which is you create a whitelist and you brand the whitelist. You say, okay, this is, we've got a collaboration between the Boston Globe, the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, I don't know, Los Angeles Times, Paul Krugman. I mean, just go get the best brand names you can in journalism and create a list of news sources that you believe are good journalism. And that's it. Whitelist. Don't blacklist. Whitelist. And by the way, include some blogs on there too to prove that it's not just a matter of trying to be exclusive. And by the way, also, that act of including blogs is far more radical than anything that they're contemplating doing in civil. And it also is more likely to solve a lot of our problems. You know, Dan Gilmore has been posting. I usually don't agree with Dan Gilmore, Matthew. I mean, he's a friend of mine. I've been friends with Dan for many, many years. He was, we've done some good projects together. And, you know, in recent years, I've been, you know, a lot of shaking my head. I don't agree with Dan. But lately, it's like we're batting 1,000, I believe, in everything he's saying. And I haven't managed to get together with him. I have said this to him on, you know, electronically. But I just would love to know. It's like, is he drinking different brand of coffee now? Or I don't know what happened. But we see eye to eye. But the... So he's calling out journalism for being chicken shit. And he's absolutely right. Journalism is like, come on, you're really hedging your bet over whether a guy is lying on this? You have the evidence. Let's move beyond this, you know, because everybody is stuck just spinning around the same fucking story over and over again. Yes, we knew that a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. This isn't new, you know, and it's gotten so ridiculous. I don't even watch the fucking MSNBC news anymore. Because the things they're reporting are things that are obviously, or have been obviously true for a very, very long time. So, and then yesterday, out comes this article written by Stephen Miller's uncle. And I'm reading, you know, this thing, you know, and I think we all did read it. And it was like chin-dropping great. I mean, it was just incredible. It's like, why didn't people think of this before? You know, is that all these people have relatives, and how must they feel about their relatives? Because this is the United States of America. This is not Russia. We are a nation of immigrants. Russia is not a nation of immigrants. And we all have stories. I have stories in my family that if I were doing what Stephen Miller is doing, I would fully expect that... that someone in my family would denounce me. And of course, if somebody in my family were doing this, I fucking totally would be on top of this. I might be scared, but this guy showed incredible courage. It must have taken him. I mean, but on the other hand, look who his relative is and what a hypocrite he is and what an incredible, incredible story. And that's followed by the son of Goodlatte. I think that's how you pronounce his name. What a name, right? And I'm thinking, wow, isn't this is exactly what I've been talking about, is let the fucking people into journalism and they won't suffer the lack of courage that journalism has. And that, of course, is precisely why journalism doesn't want to let them in. Not that they're even conscious of this, but journalism has tagged everybody who's not in journalism into one lump category of people. We're the commenters. Right, we're the people whose comments they can't stand to read, because we're all so impolite and radical and disgusting and flamers and trollers and all the rest of this shit, right? But that was, I'm not one of those people. I have been victimized by those people long before any of those people were. I mean, it's like there is a complex world out there. The New York Times, for example, has this incredible readership of people who have knowledge and experience, money. Money should never be an issue here because there is just so much of it. And now the will, because Trump has created this, the will to do something to stop this. And yet we're all sidelined. We're all sitting on the sidelines watching this shit play out and watching the journalists still fight for their access. That's why the New York Times is so wimpy when it comes to pushing back. We watched the whole terrible cataclysm regarding Hillary's emails. You know, the article after article that just accepted the Republican bullshit about what damage she was doing, you know, whatever. It's a fucking email server. It's like we know what those are. There's nothing mysterious about it. The news should have been all laughing at him and at them right from the start, because that was the reality. The reality is you're trying to take advantage of the fact that we don't understand the technology. The thing about the Republicans is they listen to their technologists, and their technologists say, yeah, I bet if you say this, they'll probably just believe you. First time I ever saw that was with John Sculley at Apple, where they were saying that Windows has multitasking, but Macintosh doesn't have multitasking. And I was a Mac developer at the time, and I understood what Windows was and what DOS underneath it was, and it was a lie. The Macintosh had multitasking every bit as much as Windows did, plus they had APIs for it, and it was a much better environment to develop for. I mean, the underlying premise of their attack was, you know, the Macintosh is a toy and Windows is real software, when the opposite was true. It was the other way around. And Sculley had no confidence in his own ability to understand. I don't know if he had people around him who knew, who were telling him this, but I used to get up at every fucking conference. I once heard him actually concede this. Well, we understand we have some work to do on the multitasking front in our operating system. And I got up and said, John, trust me, I'm a developer on your platform. Yeah, of course you have work to do, but they have more work to do. Your shit works. Theirs is kind of glued together with scotch tape and baling wire, and so is yours, but less. And it works. We were doing multitasking. We're building incredible shit around the multitasking in the Mac OS. And I knew the guys at Microsoft, and some of them, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, some of them were even friends of mine. And I understood what they were doing. And so anyway, so the Republicans obviously have the same kind of chutzpah that the Microsoft people had. They think, oh, the Democrats are just a bunch of Scullies. They'll fold. True enough, they did. They didn't mount an offense to counter this. They didn't call them out on bullshit. But there's this incredible amount of money that goes into journalism around politics. So what the fuck is that money for if it couldn't out this bullshit? And it couldn't. And it didn't. And that really did influence the election. Hillary's emails. How many times did that land, did that punch land and cause doubts? You know, crooked Hillary, lock her up. All that was based on that bullshit. And it was all bullshit. And it was all because journalism is weak, lame, scared, all those negative things. They're cowardly. They are hogging the fast lane, and our democracy is falling apart as a result of it. We don't have time for like big solutions while we waiting for big solutions that, by the way, are not going to come. That's the W3C. That's what you're looking at there. That's where we're headed. That's the W3C. That's not going to be an answer. In the end, SOAP did not beat out XMLRPC. It became a laughingstock. It was a punchline. It was the explanation why the big companies are fucking. You ask anybody, go ahead and do a search on it. SOAP is a fucking punchline. Same thing with Adam. You know, not so much ridiculed, but it sure as hell didn't do anything remotely like what the founders of it thought. They just thought, oh, well, as soon as people see how cool Adam is, they'll just stop using RSS. Well, didn't happen that way. And I knew it wouldn't happen that way. It just doesn't fucking happen that way. What we need is we need a lot more of the kind of journalism that we saw with the with Stephen Miller's uncle. We need the journalists to at least step back enough so that these, I mean, Politico did a great thing by running that story. We need a lot more of that kind of stuff, and it needs to not just be in areas that the existing journalists understand. It has to blow by all that. We need to create trust outside of that. It is not going to be designed by Future of Journalism conference attendees, which is basically what I think Vivian Schiller, who is a wonderful person. I don't have any problems with Vivian or with Emily or any of the other people that are involved with the Knight Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. But the answer isn't going to come from there. any more than any kind of an answer ever came from the W3C. So anyway, I have talked long enough here. Maybe I will just publish this as a podcast on my site, because it's time for me to say something about this. So anyway, talk to you later. Bye-bye.